Chapter 3. The Jewish people and their return to the land. Now let's take a look at the future prophecies concerning the Jewish people and see just how close we're getting to the last days. The first end time prophecy concerning the Jewish people letting us know we're living in the last days is that Israel would return to the land. You see, the Old Testament prophets repeatedly promised that one day God would regather the Jews back into their land, no matter how far they got scattered on the planet. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Isaiah 11:11-12. In that day the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant that is left of his people from Assyria, from Lower Egypt, from Upper Egypt, from Cush, from Elam, from Babylonia, from Hamath and from the islands of the sea. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel, he will assemble the scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth.
So here we see God clearly declaring that one day, against all odds, no matter what it looks like, no matter how long it's been, he would one day regather the Jewish people back into the land he gave them. Why? They were so obedient and wonderful. No. Because of his great name and in the unconditional covenant he made with them concerning the land.
Ezekiel 36:22, 23, 24, 28. Therefore say to the house of Israel, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, it is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I am going to do these things, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you have gone, then the nations will know that I am the Lord, for I will take you out of the nations, I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your own land. You will live in the land I gave your forefathers, you will be my people, and I will be your God. Jeremiah 16:14-15. However, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when men will no longer say, as surely as the Lord lives, who brought the Israelites up out of Egypt, but they will say, as surely as the Lord lives, who brought the Israelites up out of the land of the north and out of all the countries where he had banished them. For I will restore them to the land I gave their forefathers.
So here we see God clearly saying he will bring the Jewish people back to the land, so the world will know that he is not just real, but that he's a holy and righteous God who keeps his promises. And here's the point. This incredible gathering of the Jews from the four corners of the earth has occurred in our lifetime. Which means, we're living in the last days. In fact, God also predicted the exact order in which the Jewish people would return to the land in the last days.
Isaiah 43:5-6. Do not be afraid, for I am with you, I will bring your children from the east and gather you from the west. I will say to the north, give them up. And to the south, do not hold them back. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth.
Since the destruction of the Jewish temple in 70 AD, the Jewish people have been scattered all over the earth. But during the past century alone, millions of Jews have returned to Israel, fulfilling this very prophecy. In fact, just like the Bible said, they not only came specifically from the east, the west, the north and the south, but they came in that exact order. First from the east, in the early 1900s, when many of the Jews living in the Middle East moved to Israel. Then from the west, during mid-1900s, hundreds of thousands of Jews living in the West, Europe and the United States, began moving to Israel. In 1900 there were only 40,000 Jews in all of Israel. But by the end of World War II that number had ballooned to over 600,000. Then from the north, during the 1980s and early 90s, Russia finally began to allow hundreds of thousands of Jews to return to Israel. In the past, Russia held the world's largest Jewish population, but they were unable to return to the land because they were being held captive in the Soviet Union. The Russians hated the Jews, they blamed them for all their nation's problems. But God said the Jews would come from the north, and it just so happens Russia is the uttermost part of the north. So, when God says, I will say to the north, give them up. Guess what? Not even Russia can stop it. And sure enough, in fulfillment of this prophecy, the Russian Empire began to crumble, and Gorbachev suddenly opened the door for the Jewish people to flood back into Israel. In fact, in just 2 years, almost 400,000 Russian Jews arrived in Israel, averaging over 16,600 per month, and for many years during this period, Russia had a higher rate of immigration to Israel than any other country on the planet. The Jewish people did all this knowing these sobering facts. They would have to abandon all valuables. They would face the necessity of learning Hebrew. They would have to live in minimal housing. They would face military service. They would find a non-existent job market. They would have to pay some of the highest taxes in the world. They would face the constant threat of terrorism and war. They were fully aware of these stark realities because all of them had relatives living in Israel. Yet, despite all these hardships, they came. Why? Because God had placed in their hearts to return home. Why? Because we're living in the last days. And next, from the south, Israel struck a deal with Ethiopia's communist government. And on the weekend of May 25, 1991, 14,500 Ethiopian Jews were airlifted to Israel. It was called Operation Solomon, and it dealt with the largest Jewish population to the south of Jerusalem, made up of the black Ethiopian Jews. No one knows for sure the origin of these Jews. The most common speculation is that they resulted from a union between King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba, 2 Chronicles 9. But we know for sure they did exist because in the book of Acts, chapter 8, it contains the story of an Ethiopian Jew who came to Jerusalem to observe the feasts and who converted to Christianity on his way back home to Africa by Philip the Evangelist. But in the late 1980s, the Jews of Ethiopia began to feel a tug on their hearts to return to the Jewish homeland, just like the Jews did in the north in Russia. So, they started migrating by the thousands and camped out around the international airport there, demanding transportation to Israel. Well, the government adamantly refused to let them leave. But what did God say? I will say to the north, give them up. And to the south, do not hold them back, and so in fulfillment of this prophecy. In 1991, the Ethiopian government began to crumble in the midst of a civil war, and the United States and Israel intervened, providing bribes to military leaders, which caused the government to relent and provide a 48-hour window for the refugees to depart. The resulting airlift was amazing. In just under 36 hours, 14,500 Ethiopian Jews, nearly the entire Jewish population, was flown to Tel Aviv in 40 flights involving 35 aircraft. At one point, there were 28 planes in the air at one time. And a world record was set when one Boeing 747, designed to carry about 350 people, was loaded up with 1,086 passengers. This was possible because all the seats had been stripped out of the plane, the Ethiopians weighed very little, and they had no luggage. When that particular plane reached Tel Aviv, there was a total of 1,088 on board because 2 babies had been born en route. As one guy said, when I read about that development in the newspapers at the time, I immediately thought of a prophecy in Jeremiah 31:8, which reads,
Jeremiah 31:8. Behold, I am bringing them from the north country, and I will gather them from the remote parts of the earth, among them the blind and the lame, the woman with child and she who is in labor with child, together, a great company, they will return here.
And today, over 6 million Jews, as many as were killed in the Holocaust, have been gathered back to their homeland, and they are still coming, returning to Israel every single year from all over the world. First from the east, west, north, and south. Just like the Bible said they would. When? In the last days. It's time we wake up, folks. This is all a major prophecy sign, as this man shares. Jeremy Gimple, the ingathering of the exiles, is the most prophesied event in the Bible. It is mentioned over 40 times, unprecedented in history. Never before has a nation been scattered across the world then scattered back to its ancient homeland, and yet every single prophet mentioned this miraculous feat that has happened.
Jeremiah 31:7. I will bring them from the land of the north and gather them from the ends of the earth. Among them will be the blind and the lame, the pregnant and the birthing together, a great congregation will return.
We hereby proclaim the establishment of the Jewish state in the land of Israel to be known as the State of Israel. John Voigt, and now they have been returned to the land, and the land is still carrying the names of the great history of this people. It's unbelievable. Jeremy Gimple, today in Israel you see universalism. Jews from Ethiopia, Africa, Asia, North America, South America, Russia, the entire world has now returned to the land of Israel. And remember, this is good news for us, because if God does keep his unconditional promise to the Jewish people to return to the land, then that means we can also trust him with our unconditional new covenant in Jesus to take us to heaven. This is also a major mega sign we're living in the last days. Now with all that said, there's a problem. Even though God shares all these amazing prophecies about the Jewish people in advance, so we would be encouraged in our promises with him, and also know we're living in the last days, there are people, even in the church, who have either, as we saw before, bought into the lie of replacement theology, and or who don't even read the Bible, let alone study Bible prophecy, or who aren't even Christians in the first place. So, They flat out don't even care what God says about his eternal covenant with the Jewish people, which includes the promise to return to the land in the last days. But this lack of biblical knowledge and false teaching has led to another problem. People not only don't catch the significance of the Jewish people returning to the land, but they now say they have no right to the land. What? And this attitude is basically called anti-Zionism. That the Jews have no right to go back to Zion, or the land God promised to them. It's crazy because we already saw the Abrahamic covenant which promised it, and which was later reiterated in the Davidic covenant, both of which are unconditional, by the way. But even beyond that, it's like, what Bible are you reading? Because if there's one thing that's clear in the scripture, it's that God created the earth and all the things in it, Colossians 1, and that he also owns all of it.
Psalm 24:1. The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world, and all who live in it.
Therefore, God has the right to give it to whoever he wants. And that's why he says he not only gave this specific section of the land to the Jewish people, but he gave it to them forever.
Genesis 17:7-8. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you are now an alien, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God. Psalm 105:6-11. O descendants of Abraham his servant, O sons of Jacob, his chosen ones. He is the Lord our God, his judgments are in all the earth. He remembers his covenant forever, the word he commanded, for a thousand generations, the covenant he made with Abraham, the oath he swore to Isaac. He confirmed it to Jacob as a decree, to Israel as an everlasting covenant, to you I will give the land of Canaan as the portion you will inherit. Ezekiel 37:25. They will live in the land I gave to my servant Jacob, the land where your fathers lived. They and their children's children will live there forever, and David my servant will be their prince forever. Romans 11:28-29. But as far as election is concerned, they, the Jewish people, are loved on account of the patriarchs, for God's gifts and his call are irrevocable.
In other words, they're going to get the land. In fact, here's what that irrevocable promise of land for the Jewish people looked like. Hence, what we know as the Promised Land. This is the general area. In fact, there are over 130 verses in the Bible that reiterate the truth that the land of Israel had been divinely given to the Jewish people. Yet, you have the false teaching of replacement theology saying things like this. A widely distributed Christian magazine published an article concerning Israel, and the following are quotes from that article.
It is a mistake for Christians to exalt Israelis to the position of being God's chosen people. The progressive revelation of Scripture makes it clear that, today, God has only one people, and it is the Church. We must not apply Old Testament prophecies to the state of Israel when Jesus, Peter, and Paul have radically redirected our thinking concerning the covenants of promise. They are now directed to the Church. The Israeli claim to Palestine as a Jewish state by divine right is incorrect, and their continued enforcement of this claim by military oppression is unjust. As one guy says, these statements are typical of what is taught in replacement theology that teaches the Church has replaced Israel. How is this substitution possible?
I agree, especially if you read the Bible, which is what we Christians are supposed to base truth on. But speaking of Palestine, this is an argument that comes up with the non-Christian over the land that was given to the Jewish people. They say, it belongs to the Palestinians and that the Jewish people are illegally occupying their land. Really? First of all, did you know there is not now and never has been a country called Palestine? It's a regional name, not the name of a country. It's like saying the states on the east coast of the US are New England. It's a regional name, not the name of a country. We also call the states in the middle of the US the Bible Belt. That's not the name of a country. I grew up in Kansas. I didn't put down as my country of origin the Bible Belt. And so, it is with Palestine. It's not a country but a region. There's no country for the Jewish people to illegally occupy. Furthermore, the name for the region Palestine came as a result of a later renaming of the land by the Romans of Judea that belonged to the Jews. We often hear these historic claims about the Palestinians. Mahmoud al-Habash, Minister of Religious Affairs, Palestinian Authority, The Palestinians have been on this land for 5,000 years. What's fact and what's fiction?
The early versions of the word Palestine, Palaiset, Palashtu, Palaistin, refer to a small region on the Mediterranean coast of Egypt and to the Philistines, a great Greek people like many others, the Hittites, Canaanites, Amorites, Nubtans, and the Jebusites, have vanished over time and have no connection to today's Palestinians. The word Palestine was first formally used by the Roman Emperor Hadrian. During his rule, Hadrian massacred the rebellious Jewish population in the Kingdom of Judea and sent most of the remaining Jewish population into exile. Hadrian was determined to obliterate thousands of years of Jewish presence in the land that is documented in expansive archaeological findings that we use today. So, he decided to rename of the province of Judea and Syria Palaestina after the vanished nemesis of the ancient Jews, the Philistines.
And again, note the Philistines are no longer in existence, from which we get the name Palestine, which means there is no such thing as a Palestinian people, historically speaking, right? The term Palestine was just a renaming, out of spite, of Judea that belonged to the Jewish people, but there are no true Palestinians. So, the question is, who are the people in that land who are claiming to be Palestinians that no longer exist? Well, they're Arabs who are descendants of Ishmael who were not promised the land.
Genesis 17:18 and verse 21. And Abraham said to God, "If only Ishmael might live under your blessing." Then God said, "My covenant I will establish with Isaac."
So, no matter what they want to say in the media, the Arabs who call themselves Palestinians are descendants of Ishmael, who have no part in the Abrahamic land covenant. I didn't say that. God did. Only descendants of Isaac who gave birth to Jacob, whose name was later changed to Israel, who gave birth to the 12 tribes, which is where we get the accurate name for an actual country of an actual people called Israel. But then you'll have people say, well, the Jewish people are being greedy with the land. They need to share. Really? Well, first of all, it's their land. I mean, if you have a home, would it be right for people to force you to share your home with people who have no right to your home, and you don't even know? And not just total strangers, but to people who want to kill you on top of that and take over your home. And yet that's exactly what Israel has repeatedly done. David Brog, Executive Director, Maccabee Task Force.
If Israel just allowed the Palestinians to have a state of their own, there would be peace in the Middle East. Right. That's what you hear from the UN ambassadors, diplomats, and most college professors. But what if I told you that Israel has already offered the Palestinians a state of their own? And not just once, but on 5 separate occasions. Don't believe me? Let's review the record. After the breakup of the Ottoman Empire in 1914, following World War I, Britain took control of most of the Middle East, including the area that constitutes modern Israel. 17 years later, in 1936, the Arabs rebelled against the British and against the Jewish neighbors. The British formed a task force, the Peel Commission, to study the cause of the rebellion. The commission concluded that the reason for the violence was that two peoples, Jews and Arabs, wanted to govern the same land. The answer, the Peel Commission concluded, would be to create 2 independent states. One for the Jews and one for the Arabs, a 2-state solution. The suggested split was heavily in favor of the Arabs. Britain offered them 80% of the disputed territory. The Jews the remaining 20%. Yet despite the tiny size of their proposed state, the Jews voted to accept this offer. The Arabs rejected it and resumed their violent rebellion. That was rejection number 1. 10 years later, in 1947, the British asked the United Nations to find a new solution to the continuing tensions. Like the Peel Commission, the UN decided that the best way to resolve the conflict was to divide the land. In November 1947, the UN voted to recreate 2 states. Again, the Jews accepted the offer, and again, the Arabs rejected it. Only this time by launching an all-out war. Rejection number 2. Jordan, Egypt, Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria joined the conflict, but they failed. Israel won the war and got on with the business of building a new nation. Most of the land set aside by the UN for an Arab state, the West Bank and East Jerusalem, became occupied territory. Occupied not by Israel but by Jordan. 20 years later, in 1967, the Arabs, led this time by Egypt, and joined by Syria and Jordan, once again sought to destroy the Jewish state. The 1967 conflict, known as the Six-Day War, ended in a stunning victory for Israel. Jerusalem and the West Bank, as well as the area known as the Gaza Strip, fell into Israel's hands. The government split over what to do with this new territory. Half wanted to turn the West Bank back to Jordan and Gaza to Egypt in exchange for peace. The other half wanted to give it to the region's Arabs, who had begun referring to themselves as the Palestinians in the hope that they might build their own state there. Neither initiative got very far. A few months later, the Arab League had met in Sudan and issued its infamous three no's: no peace with Israel, no recognition of Israel, and no negotiations with Israel. Again, the two-state solution was dismissed by the Arabs, making this rejection number three. In 2000, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak met at Camp David with Palestinian Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat to conclude a new two-state plan. Barak offered the Palestinian state all of Gaza and 94% of the West Bank with East Jerusalem as its capital. But the Palestinian leader rejected the offer. In the words of the US President Bill Clinton, Arafat was here 14 days and said no to everything. Instead, the Palestinians launched a bloody wave of suicide bombings that killed over 1,000 Israelis and maimed thousands more on buses, in wedding halls, and in pizza parlors. Rejection number 4. In 2008, Israel tried yet again. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert went even farther than Ehud Barak had, expanding the peace offer to include additional land to sweeten the deal. Like his predecessor, the new Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas turned the deal down. Rejection number 5. In between these last two Israeli offers, Israel unilaterally left Gaza, giving the Palestinians complete control there. Instead of them developing this territory for the good of its citizens, the Palestinians turned Gaza into a terrorist base from which they fired thousands of rockets into Israel. Each time Israel has agreed to a Palestinian state, the Palestinians have rejected the offer, often violent.
And yet, Israel is the bad guy who won't share their home with people who have no right to it and who want to kill them. As one diplomat was quoted as saying in the Jerusalem Post, "The Arabs never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity." 6. But even then, people will still say that the Jewish people just have way too much land, and they need to give up even more land for all these Palestinian refugees. Really? First of all, again, there are no such people as the Palestinian people. They're called that now, but historically they don't exist, and they're Arab descendants of Ishmael, who have no right to the land. These refugees are political pawns in the hand of the Muslim nations who created them in the first place. They are only using them as tools to try to dupe the world into getting Israel out of the land. The Muslim nations, in the past, told the Arabs living in that area to leave their homes and let them, the Muslims, destroy Israel, and then, when they were done destroying the Jewish people, they could go back to their homes and even retake the Jewish homes. Great deal, right? Well, the problem was, they lost. They are not going to defeat Israel. So now, these Arabs who got duped by the Muslim nations into leaving their homes, have been purposely left wandering around. They are now who we call the Palestinian refugees. Yet, the Muslims say the Jewish people need to give up their land to make room for these refugees that they created, when the whole time, the Muslim nations have plenty of room to take care of their own.
Now, in terms of Israel giving up land, they gave back the Sinai and the Gaza Strip. How much does Israel actually have in comparison to the other countries in the region? I'd like for you to see Israel in comparison to the other countries. What we are going to do is compare members of the Arab League, not counting the PLO, and we are going to add Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan to this mix, and we are going to compare those countries with Israel. The following maps are to scale. First, we are going to start in Northwest Africa, Morocco, Western Sahara and Mauritania, Algeria and Tunisia, Libya and Sudan, Djibouti, Somalia and Comoros. These are all Arab League nations. Also included are Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan, and further east Iraq, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Oman, and then finally Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. And now Israel, a tiny little piece of land in the middle of all these Arab nations. I get the same response every time I show this map. Silence. People do not understand just how small Israel is. Sometimes Israel is compared to the state of New Jersey. I compare it more to Lake Michigan. The whole country of Israel can fit into Lake Michigan. yet the world says they have too much land. The total land mass of all the Arab League states is 464 times greater than that of Israel's. So, I ask the question, is there no room for a Jewish state? The world's answer is no, or will determine how large or will carve it up.
But you might want to read God's warning about those who would do that.
Joel 3:1-2. In those days and at that time, when I restore the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem, I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. There I will enter into judgment against them concerning my inheritance, my people Israel, for they scattered my people among the nations and divided up my land.
You know, the very thing we see in the news, every single day, that everybody, including our own president, wants to do. Folks, we're living in the last days and it's time to get motivated. And this is why, out of love, God has given us this update on the final countdown, tribulation rising concerning the Jewish people and the Antichrist to show us that the 7-year tribulation is near, and the return of Jesus Christ is rapidly approaching. That's why Jesus himself said.
Luke 21:28 When these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near.
People of God, like it or not, we are headed for the final countdown. The signs of the 7-year tribulation are rising all around us. It's time to wake up. And so, the point is this. If you're reading this today and you're not a Christian, then I beg you, please heed these signs, heed these warnings, give your life to Jesus now. You don't want to be here when God pours out his judgment upon the nations. It's the worst time in the history of mankind, so horrible that unless God shortened the time frame, the entire human race would be destroyed. The only way to escape is through Jesus. Take the way out now before it's too late. Get saved today. But, if you're reading this today and you're a Christian, then would you please stop goofing off like this guy? An erupting volcano is a serious hazard, but it's reasonable to assume these guys only want to know if said hazard is literal. Hawaii's Kilauea volcano has destroyed 36 structures, including 26 homes, since it first began releasing lava on May 3, 2018, according to NBC News, which provides these details.
If Hawaii's Kilauea volcano blows its top in the coming days or weeks, as experts fear, it could hurl ash and boulders the size of refrigerators miles into the air, shutting down airline traffic and endangering lives in all directions, scientists say. If it goes up, it will come down, said Charles Mandeville, volcano hazards coordinator for the U.S. Geological Survey. You don't want to be underneath anything that weighs 10 tons when it's coming out at 120 miles per hour.
When I first saw this, I thought it was a joke, but it's an actual photo of a guy in front of Hawaii's Kilauea volcano erupting recently, and this guy's actually golfing with his back to it like it's no big deal. And yet, how many Christians are acting like this spiritually? The planet is getting ready to blow, God's giving us all these signs, and we're walking around goofing off playing golf or whatever when the whole time God says get busy sharing the gospel. What are you doing? We're on a rescue mission, not a pleasure cruise. It's not about you, it's about reaching the lost. So, let's heed these signs ourselves and get busy doing something splendid for Jesus like sharing the gospel. Not golfing in front of a volcano. Amen?